What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's discussion of the defense. Joining me is my friend, Jim Zipcode. Jim, how you doing?
Great, Ken. How are you?
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Always a pleasure to talk football. We'll try and not go down every rabbit hole that we come across here, but a great 24-0 win. It's hard not to be feeling good about being a Ravens fan right now until you watch the two drives around the half for the Steelers in that Miami game.
I have had the Miami game turned off, so...
Sorry about that.
So they're playing well, I guess?
I won't say. yeah, let's move on and talk about the game against the Bengals. They beat them up pretty badly in this game, particularly along the offensive line. They gave them some injuries in addition to just a general beating. They generated two turnovers in this game. Nice to see them play good physical football in December.
Yes. And, I feel like maybe a lot of fans are going to feel like, yeah, it was nice to see this, but where was this 2 games ago? You know, the first time we played the Bengals.
There's someone in my life, very special to me. Okay. It's Maureen who brings up what happened in the past all the time. Can't be changed. I mean, you got to have a look forward mentality with this. This team was 1-5. They've got no business being 6-7 either and contending for a division title right now, but they are. But the last 2 weeks, very disappointing. This week was tremendously appointing.
Right. It was nice to see the Ravens team that you expected to see make an appearance this season.
Yeah. They look good. They look good running the ball. They look good playing defense, and never feel like they need to fill up a fantasy football team stat sheet either. And I am perfectly happy for everybody to be unhappy with the Ravens fantasy points generated by their skill position players, because it usually means the Ravens are doing very well, playing good defense, winning football games, that they never have to try and light it up that way.
You know, what's weird too, is you don't think about fantasy stats for defensive players, but many Ravens fans over the years have, I think bitched is not too strong a word, about having individual pass rushers not put up great sack statistics and then leave, go to Chicago, go to New England and become double digit sack players. But when they were here, they were a part of defenses that were leading the league or second in the league in fewest points per game. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the point of the defense, not to rack up an individual player's statistical contributions like sacks, but to like stop the other team from scoring.
Well, there's some a bold new insight there, but
that's what you have to come to this podcast for.
I seriously hope everybody really gets that. I mean, when they talk about, of course, Lamar's going to get 4,000 yards. Look at all the opportunities he left on the field last year. Well, no, that's, you know, if the Ravens are playing really well and he's dominating, you know, the Ravens are dominating defensively the way you would have hoped they would have this year, 3,400, 3,500 yards, big possibility, especially any missed time. Which, by the way, anybody who's projecting ahead for receiver, whatever, they never project any missed time.
Right.
They never project any reduction from absolutely optimal targeting of that player is the other thing. Yeah, you know, so you notice. I know you do a lot of yards per target work.
Right.
You know, and it's you know, I'm glad you're latching on to the most important statistic there is for receivers for that, which is good, but. You know, we have a bunch of people who I don't think really get that. It's like we're dealing with pre on base percentage baseball statistics, and all they can look at is the scoreboard.
Yeah,
it's tough. By the way, for those of you who are not Jim or my age, the scoreboard statistics in baseball weren't always on base percentage, slugging percentage, and OPS. They at one time they were batting average, home runs, and RBIs.
Yeah.
Those are the Triple Crown statistics, and those were what people
knew. And it's amazing, like, to have this modern era where OBP, for example, is displayed mm-hmm. for every single player. You know, that's such an insight. That's such a step forward analytically. People don't realize.
It's incredible. They take step forwards, and they take step backwards, too, and they add two numbers that are not related, like on-base percentage and slugging percentage together to get OPS. And all they do is just piss me off in the process. Because, you know, why don't you add fielding percentage at it once? Because you want one whole value of contribution that includes fielding. Makes no sense. Anyway.
It's not as well designed as a statistic like YTS, for example, that multiplies completion per, success rate times yards per. So
YPT. Oh, okay. Wait, you're saying your statistic that you multiply one times the other.
Right.
That takes it maybe one step too far, but we'll talk about that another time. All right, let's talk about the Ravens defense again. They activated just four defensive linemen again.
This crazy.
Absolutely optimal situation to do so, and I still hate it.
Yeah.
Still absolutely hate it. So I you know, you're taking a chance against a team that they don't run the ball tremendously effectively, but they've been a little bit good with Chase Brown lately, mm-hmm. and you don't mm-hmm. want that to all of a sudden be a reason you lose the football game or can't get the ball back. And if he had an injury, that would certainly happen. They really leaned on a ton of snaps from Travis Jones in this game, too.
Which is what he did in college. Remember, he played a zillion snaps in college.
A lot of players play a lot of snaps in college. A lot of great players play a lot of snaps in college because they're the best player on their team, yada, yada. There's at the pro level, the effort required per play and the type of athlete you're going up against is at such a higher level that you can't, I don't think it's a good idea ever. Jones, Matabike was a guy who always wanted to play less snaps. As it turned out, I don't believe that to be a factor in his injury anyway, but that was a shame. And I don't think you can plan for a player to play a lot of snaps without taking some additional risk with him.
The other thing is that I think against this team, against Joe Burrow, I would think that you would want to do what you can to ensure that you had a consistent pass rush all through the game. So you would want to keep guys fresh, rotate guys. So that's another reason why a light defensive line package worries me going into a game like this.
Right. Well, they also, and with Travis Jones being their only real good defensive line pass rusher, because they've got three nose tackles, including Travis Jones, and then they had Brent Urban active for this game. Last week is four nose tackles and Brent Urban. Mm. And they don't have anybody but Travis Jones. So Travis Jones is on the field every single high leverage passing snap, every dime snap they have, he's out there. They did have one exception in this game. They played a quarter snap where they didn't have any defensive lineman on the field. But they really are leaning on him heavy, very heavily. Unfortunately, he had a great game in this one.
So they went very light on that one and had a. From that standpoint, very light on the defensive line and had a really successful day defensively. How'd they manage it?
So, I mean, obviously they played good run defense, held them to 3.4 yards per carry. One of the things that was nice was they only used 1.66 linemen per play, which is very low. Even in the Ravens' big race car year, I think they were at about 176 in terms of per play defensive linemen. They only played one snap of base defense the whole game. So only one time they have three defensive linemen on the field. Never had a jumbo or anything like that. No goal line packages, nothing. So they basically were able to go very light on defensive linemen in this game. It's a damn good thing. But I'll tell you, with that opening drive extending as long as it did down the field and then continuing getting first downs, I was already concerned at that point about snap count getting away from the Ravens.
Which it did, and they won anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Maybe we talk about that next, but this is a game, they lost snap count 71-40 in this game. 71-40. The 40 snaps ties the week five effort, I'm using air quotes, versus Houston for the fewest snaps in team history with 40. If they had had 35, and all that would have taken is for one more first down by the Bengals, who were effectively just running out the clock on themselves on that last drive.
Right.
So they got up, they got down 24-0. They decided we're giving up now, threw the white flag in, run. A couple passes sprinkled in to convert, but they weren't doing anything special. And they weren't trying to score. But if they gotten one more first down there and still not scored, which I think, you know, is probably a pretty good possibility, they would have run out the rest of that clock. And had that happened, the Ravens would have gone the entire fourth quarter without a snap.
So that's crazy, because those stats do not indicate, those don't correlate with wins typically.
No, they're not typically a good, you know, good solid snap count means you tire the opponent defense and quality per snap is lower too. Now there are countercurrents in there because you pick up a lot of snaps when you're desperate and you're going for it on fourth down and making it sometimes and not making it other times. That gives you fresh down sets and whatnot. So there are countercurrents, and that's where a lot of people have looked at snaps and said, well, there's no impact of that. There's no impact of snap count that correlates to this and that. And all they're doing, this comes up in actuarial work all the time, is you can't see something that is obvious because you've lost the causality components. You've lost various elements of causality. And so, yes, there are countercurrents in here that you lose, but once you factor out them, then you're back to, oh, yeah, well, that makes more sense now. And so that's why I think that people have lost it in this case in terms of saying, well, there's no impact to snaps. Look, I've studied it. Okay.
I feel like Football Outsiders has studied the issue and said that like defenses don't, there's no obvious effect of defenses tiring during the game or defenses struggling to control Derrick Henry as the game goes on or anything like that. The defenses don't wear out. And that seems so counterintuitive. That seems so counter to what I think I see with my eyes that I have trouble understanding what the research is showing.
If you have a link for that, I'll take it from you, by the way. I'd love to read it. Aaron is somebody I've had the argument with. Mm-hmm. And we never let it last for very long because we're on the show talking about something else. But
sure.
I don't buy it. I mean, it's that simple. It just doesn't make any intuitive sense. So it probably means you're losing elements in countercurrents. Yeah.
So you said that this was one of the lowest snap games in Ravens history.
Yeah.
Is it the lowest snap victory? Lowest snap count victory in Ravens
history? They've only had 240s, and they lost the week five game against Houston. They won this one. The lowest snap count ever in a game as far back as Pro Football Reference has information. I don't know what year that starts. What any guesses to who that might have been?
For some data, they go back to 97, and for other data, they go back to 71 or earlier, and it depends on which data.
I don't think they have play-by-play data all the way back into the 70s, so I think this would be somewhere in the 90s they have data for. So just if you knew the 90s were sometime, do you have any sense of which team had the lowest snap count ever for a game? It's not obvious, so, you know.
It's not like the Aints or anything like that?
It's the 1999 Browns in their inaugural game returning to the league, got beat 43-0 by the Steelers and had 28 plays run.
Ouch.
They turned the ball over 6 times. And you got to be really efficient with your turnovers, by the way. You got to get got to get the ball turned over quickly every time you get it to you know, because every time it's one offensive play being charged against your total kind of thing. They only had 2 first downs in the game. Tim Couch came in and finished the game. I forget who started it, but it was nobody good. Tim Couch threw the last 3 passes. Anyway, it's a funny box score to look at if you care to.
Something the Browns fans celebrate.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Peyton Manning, do you remember I know you remember this, the 2007 playoffs where Indy came to town and beat the Ravens. Peyton Manning talked after that game about how they because that was a very low snap game for that Indianapolis offense. And he talked about how they have different strategies for, you know, if we're not going to possess the ball very long, like how do we win a low snap game, which I don't understand that at all. And so obviously Peyton's football brain is, you know, more expansive than mine, but like, I would think that every time you get the ball, you're still trying to do the same things. I wouldn't think that you would change your offensive strategy based on how many drives you're getting.
Okay. I mean, it could have been based on drives. They got they had 66 snaps in that game. They beat the Ravens 66-51 in snaps, and they went 8 of 19 on third down. That is kind of the way I remember that game, is they were playing a game of takeaway or keep away against the Ravens pretty much the entire game. We got to get back to the Ravens offense, Ravens defense here. Yeah. Ravens and Bengals defense here. So they lost Buchanan in the game. They have an unknown situation at present with Awuzie. My understanding is not a serious long-term injury is what we're told, but we're not sure. Harbaugh said he was not sure about availability this week, and he would know later in the week. But Buchanan lost for the year with an ACL.
That's awful.
It is awful. Simpson is in to replace him. What do you think about this situation?
So I think that, I'm saddened by it, and I'm concerned by it, because I thought that Teddy Buchanan had really kind of blossomed into a very important player on this defense. I think he's the second leading tackler maybe on the season. Mm-hmm. He became a very effective partner for Roquan. I thought he did a nice job in coverage, and his run defense had just improved every week, I thought, or at least every month during the season. And there is a reason that they drafted somebody to replace, to take Trenton Simpson's spot. So I'm concerned, you know, I'm sorry, I should have led with, you know, the devastation for the young man himself and how I hope he, you know, does well and all that. But also in terms of its impact on the Ravens defense, I'm really concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he'd been a good tackler so far this year. So that part is certainly good. And his tackle statistics are front and center in terms of what he does. He hasn't been a good coverage player. And I don't think there's any sugarcoating that. One of the things I think they'd hoped is that he would give, the presence of him would give him the option to move on from Roquan Smith next year. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a question at all. I don't think they'll be doing that. I think that Roquan for $7 million is looking like a real bargain now next year. And that's basically what it is. So I don't think they're moving on to Teddy Buchanan at the mic, but I think that is what they were basically looking for, was that they would have an option to move forward.
How did Trenton Simpson play in the game after he came in for Buchanan?
Yeah, it was interesting because Simpson did, I thought he was okay for instance, that game. Not great, not terrible, but I think he maybe was more effective when they'd been using him on more specific bases before. But I'm looking at Simpson's line here in the database, and the Ravens did an unusual amount of switching to dime on second and seven and second and eight plays where they have not been doing that this year with Buchanan. So it's not like no second and seven or no second and eight, but the very first play of quarter two, for example, Buchanan is out. After Simpson is in on first and 10, he's pulled on second and seven for a dime defense. Now, obviously there are multiple factors in play here. Part of it is you're playing the Bengals and they're more of a passing team, and you trust them to, you know, you trust the front five effectively to stop the run. Right. With Hamilton when he's in as your weak side linebacker. But you're also, you know, you're going intentionally light. And in part, I think you're trying to cover up for what Simpson doesn't offer as a coverage defender.
Yeah.
And they're really trying in this game, and we'll get into this a lot more later, to play a lot of packed coverage schemes. Whenever you do that, when you only rush four, you have more ability to play downhill, more ability to disguise coverages, and more ability to layer coverages.
When you say play downhill, you mean defenders in the backfield have the catch happen in front of them. The defensive backfield have the catch pass. Sure.
Okay. Yes, exactly. And when I say layered coverages, I mean set up your brackets on the back end. Whether you're going to play cover two, cover three, you have a chance to have a safety over the top on more plays because you have more total defenders back there, and you don't have to just play single high if you don't want to. And then the other thing is you can disguise coverages. So if you start with two safeties deep, or even if wherever your safeties are, you can rotate out in more different ways if you're going to have seven in the second. This is obvious stuff. I mean, I don't have to tell anybody this, to disguise what you're trying to do. And that's very important against a quarterback like Burrow.
Is there an implication in what you're saying that maybe the Bengals abandoned the run too soon?
They weren't particularly effective with it, but they didn't do anything particularly well in this game. The only guy who was really an offensive weapon for them was Chase. And if you look at all the other receivers put together, they had 4.7 yards per target. And, you know, there's a lot of deductions from the denominator that get made before you even get to per target, meaning he had three throwaways, which got taken out. Then he's got three sacks, which got taken out. And they're negative yardage for, you know,
sure.
So you end up with, you know, negative yardage for six plays that gets taken out of a not very impressive starting spot for yards per play. Did you think so? Did you think, hey, they could have really run the ball effectively on the Ravens? They had a long run of 10 yards and 3.4 yards per carry.
I think that many teams have been able to run the ball more effectively against these Ravens than I have thought they would. And so every time that didn't happen, I was relieved. I think the thing with the Bengals is that if they can run at all, then you're in a lot of trouble, because Jamar Chase is not going away. So if they can do anything else on offense, then, you know, that really multiplies your issues. So I was consistently relieved that when they failed to run effectively.
That's a good way to put it. All right, let's keep moving on here. Obviously the injuries are significant. They're an ongoing thing. We don't know about Ronnie Stanley either, but Alohi Gilman had his best game as a Raven. I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the second play. It wasn't just the interception. The interception return for the touchdown on the handoff from Van Noy. He was set up for an interception on a ball that actually got tipped by Chase right into Marlon's hands. But he had a nice loose bracket. He was lined up directly for the interception on the play. So if Chase hadn't tipped it at all, it was going to be intercepted by Gilman. But it ended up being tipped and intercepted by Humphrey. Which was one of the three biggest plays in the game. They had three really huge plays. The Van Noy interception was the least of the three. Then the Humphrey interception and the 15-yard sack by Tavius on that first drive, which took him out of field goal range.
That was a huge play. That was a huge play because they would have started out with the lead.
Yep.
Tavius was a revelation to me. I didn't expect – there's two things. I didn't expect him to be as effective as he was. And then I felt that his presence in the rotation – you know, I don't know if it kept other pass rushers fresher or what, but I thought that it helped maybe the other pass rushers be effective as well.
I mean, it had to. They had five outside linebackers for this game. I'm completely with you on this, by the way. And Green played only 39 snaps. That's, you know, well lower than he's been playing. It's over 50%, but it's not far over 50%, maybe 53, 54%. Jones played 47. Lawson, okay, and these are the non-penalty snaps. I'll give you including penalties. So Green played 40, including penalties. Draymond played 51. Ajabo played 18, and he basically played early downs only. Played 11 first downs and 5 second downs in there. Robinson played 34 snaps, which I thought is terrific coming back. He plays basically half the snaps.
Yeah.
And Van Noy played 33. So Van Noy is really being used as a situational pass rusher now.
Which is appropriate. I think with his age, I don't know that you want to rely. I mean, he's a very, very smart player, but I don't know that he can stand up to the every down kind of productivity of it. How many snaps did you say for Tavis?
This is one where you got to limit the denominator too. So it's not 71's not the denominator more. 76 becomes the denominator, including penalties. I hate this. I wish I just stayed with my own method for for saying this. But Tavis had 34 out of 76, okay. Or he had 32 out of 71. Either way is appropriate, about 45%.
So Draymond led among the outside linebackers in snaps, and then Green, mm-hmm. and then Tavis, and then Kyle Van Noy, and then Ojabo with just 18.
Exactly.
Draymond, right. I mean, what an acquisition he has been. I had no idea that he would be as impactful as he has when we traded for him.
It's funny. We were watching the game and we had a weather situation this week where actually my ability to record the game was lost for this week. So we had to hustle and call our friend, Alec Poulianos, who a lot of people in this show know, sure. A long time, you know, friend of the show here. And he helped us get our Fios working, which had been sitting in a box for 9 months since they sent it to us. All right. And so we finally got that working. Terrible recording device, by the way. Verizon and the DVR capabilities are crap compared to what you get from on DirecTV. So there's no ability to click and move forward one frame at a time. It looks like the picture's a lot less clear, which for most people doesn't matter. If you're trying to read the numbers on the back of jerseys, it matters. It's really hard to do if you don't have a nice sharp picture. So,
and I know you've got your calibrated, like how many seconds, how many clicks add up to a second for calculating snapped pass timing and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's all gone for this, because you don't have the ability to pause and go forward one click at a time. You can only pause and restart.
We used to have that with TiVo, but we haven't had that for many years.
So anyway, enough complaining. But anyway, one thing that I thought they did as a defense was they really had an effective plan to limit Burrow. So they got a lot of not great pressure on him. We'll get into that a little bit later. Pressure was below average, but they did a great job making Burrow way underperform his opportunity set given what he had to throw with.
Did they confuse him, do you think, with like changing coverage pack looks and stuff like that? Because it seemed to me a lot of the times I saw him wind up to throw and then stop.
Yeah, I there was some of that. But the sack by Travis Jones, I remember. I thought that ball was out already, and I actually thought it hit someone's helmet and had gone to the ground. Mm-hmm. But it turned out he had held onto the ball and took the sack. I thought there were a lot of plays where the coverage was probably disguised off the snap. Burrow went with ball out quick to somebody, and particularly I'm thinking of the Gesicki shot down the middle, where they tried to go to the touchdown on fourth and four, and they had to overthrow it, but the coverage was so tight. If it had been really on target, it probably would have been picked off or disrupted. In this case, it was just off the end of Gesicki's fingertips. I thought that the throw to Tinsley in the back right corner of the end zone had outstanding underneath coverage by Humphrey. I thought that was kind of a forced overthrow there. And then he had a number of others where the Ravens pressure came very late, and he was able to saunter around back there. And then, and particularly thinking of one play where he went to the right sideline, and it was Draymond Jones. It was the crybaby play where Draymond Jones ended up hitting him on the play very late, but he's
nudging
threw the ball
him.
Away. Yeah. Nudging him. And, you know, it's a second consecutive play. I think he was asking for the flag, and then we get this thing from Draymond. That'll be amazing. That'd be one of the images I take from this game. Just absolutely loved it.
That and Kyle Van Noy handing the ball off to was it Alohi?
Gilman. Yeah. What else do we want to talk about? We talked about the snap count stuff. They're still in control of the AFC North in terms of the tiebreaker situation. I'm gonna talk about this really quickly because I think there's a simplified way to think of this. The Ravens have only two paths to make the playoffs if you think backward from the result in the last game of the year first. So if they lose to the Steelers, then the only way they get in is if they win all the remaining games and the Steelers lose all the remaining games. So they have to go 5-for-5 on the other games involved. So that's obviously a very difficult path to get there. But if they did,
is it time for me to check the Dolphins Steelers score right now?
Well, you can anytime you want.
All right.
So possibility number two is that if they win that last Steelers game, well, first of all, if they win that last Steelers game, they win every possible tiebreaker against the Steelers. They would not win head-to-head, but they could win division. And even if they don't win division, they are certain to win the third tiebreaker, which is common opponents. So they have the tiebreaker against the Steelers if they win in Week 18. Once you get there, you realize all they have to do is win one more game. Sorry, not have the Steelers win one more game than they do. No, check. They need to... calling an audible here at the line of scrimmage. They need to not lose more games than the Steelers in their two remaining games than the Steelers lose in their three remaining games.
Counting tonight. Yeah, so they have to enter Week 18 no more than one game back and beat the Steelers, and then they win the division.
And there is a possibility the two teams could have the same record after Week 16. That's next weekend. And were that to occur, then Week 17 means nothing at all. It could be a rest week for both teams. I mean, the Ravens could rest Lamar Jackson. And it is a possibility, believe me, it is a possibility that they will treat that game in exactly that way. And it's you can't rest everybody, but you can rest your players who have any sort of injury concern, and you can try and get through the game otherwise. Ronnie Stanley could rest.
Let me amplify that. So if, let's say the Steelers win tonight, but let's say they lose next week and the Ravens win next week. So after next week, the Ravens and Steelers are tied.
Yep.
The Ravens have a game against the Steelers in 2 weeks from that point. So they could give away the intermediate game and go into Pittsburgh down one game, win that game, and win the division.
That's right. So either team could be ahead by a game going into that final, but either team also has the tiebreaker if they win that game.
Yeah.
So that creates a, you pick up one and you also win the tiebreaker. So there's no impact to the week 17 game if they get themselves in that position.
Do you think that they would do that? Interesting.
I do. I think if there's any question about it, I mean, I think we've seen it. First of all, we've seen it in week 18 before the playoffs. If there's any more analogous situation, you tell me what it is. But that week 18 game is effectively the first game of the playoffs for the Ravens, if they're in that situation. Wouldn't you rest your guys for your 5-game playoff streak when you had the chance?
So I don't know, because I also know that coaches very much act on a win in hand is worth more than, you know, a theoretical win in a future week. And, the Steelers could lose that week 17. I'm sorry, the week before, you know, that's the second to last game. And if you don't win that game, then you've not taken advantage of the opportunity. I don't know.
There's no game, because you're still in the same position that if you lose the game, you lose the division. If you win the game, you win the division, regardless of whether you win that week 17 game.
The only difference
that I can think of is that either if a team gets a game ahead, they could then win the division with a tie in week 17. But I don't consider that to be enough of a reason to consider that at all.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, all right.
Let's hope the situation arises, because that would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. And I think it'd be terrible for the NFL. The NFL would not be happy about it, but it's the way to... The NFL, I mean, creates this situation in week 18 all the time. At least they're going to have a primetime week 18 game to look forward to, but they'll lose the value of the Ravens and Packers game. Will fall in terms of value. And a team that would be very unhappy with it is a team like the Lions.
Yeah.
Very unhappy if they were left out because of it. Or the Bears, for that matter.
Yeah.
All right. Very encouraging to see the Ravens play well in cold weather, because they have a lot of cold weather to look forward to. 3 more games during the regular season. All cold weather teams, cold weather climates, including, you know, a night game in Baltimore, I'm including in that group. Very possible every game the rest of the season is played under freezing, including any playoff games they may play.
Of course. Yeah. Lamar went out there in no sleeves, just bare arms.
What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, a Miami boy, right? You think of a Florida boy as being, you know, not a cold weather player. I've actually looked at that, and I haven't seen any like statistical evidence that his play is worse in cold weather. But it's, you know, you think of it as a potential vulnerability, and he's out there in his I was going to say shirt sleeves, but that's not even shirt sleeves. And I think, you know, he sends a message sometimes with the things he wears and chooses not to wear. And I think that was part of it. Go ahead.
I just to say, I wonder if there's something about, you know, the risk of a fumble might be higher with a cloth sleeve, but there's probably some other sleeve he could wear that would be, you know, I don't know what the material would be, but it'd be like a latex glove that you wore on your arm kind of thing, where I think he could grip it, you know, more effectively.
Yeah. Some kind of tacky substance on the surface of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Tacky in terms of glue is probably not allowed, but something that was a naturally kind of had some pliability to it rather than a something you just slip right off, like cloth, might be better.
Do you remember in 2019, Lamar's first MVP season, do you remember the San Francisco-based ESPN announcer who said that Lamar has an advantage because defenders can't see the brown ball against the brown skin of his arms?
Yeah, I remember that. It's a dumbass comment.
Dumbass comment, but, and Raven, I'm sorry, Lamar never said a word about it, but his next game was in Buffalo, and he wore the most glowing white sleeves I have ever seen on a football player. They were argent. They were like the gates of heaven. They were gleaming.
I got to look at that.
It was insane. I've never seen anything as white as that. Lamar, you know, he doesn't say things, but he does. Like, that was a choice. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to go back and look at that game. That's interesting.
Yeah. That was the week. It was right after those comments. Never said a word, but wore those sleeves and won.
That was a good win. It was 24-17, right? And they held Buffalo at the end of the game. Nice play by Marcus Peters finished it off, I think, in coverage of Diggs. And they a lot of nice things in that game. Okay.
So I'm just saying Lamar's sleeve choices are not always incidental, is what I'm saying.
I think he was making a choice of another type there to prove somebody wrong. I agree with you completely. I hope he doesn't get into that, by the way, on a general basis. If he gave Nick Wright any sort of credence with all the crap he slings around about him, I would just be upset with that. I think that Lamar would be, you know, it'd be beneath Lamar to consider what Nick Wright has to say about how he plays football.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Let's talk about some other general thoughts from this game. We had no practice squad elevations from this game. Very unusual for the Ravens that they didn't bring anybody up. That is going to have to change because they're going to have to find another inside linebacker now. They've got this special teams inside linebacker, Carl Jones, and I don't know what they're going to do.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Getting another one, but they're probably gonna have to go to the street, have tryouts, figure out who the next best available guy is. It is a deep size and shape pool, so that's fortunate,
right?
But If they're looking for a special teams guy, no problem. If you're looking for a guy to play two down football, probably no problem. You know, those guys, Josh Bynes was out there, for example.
Yep.
But anyway, you
see, it's one of the deeper pools. It's not quite running back, but it's not offensive tackle either. It's a deeper pool.
Yeah. Great point. That's exactly what I was trying to get there. We talked about the defensive line, outside linebackers. What else is there? Yeah, Chase had 8.3 yards per target in this game. The rest of the Bengals receivers only 4.7, and then Burrow threw the ball away three times and took three sacks for 27. So not an insignificant amount of opportunity went in that third chum bucket of opportunity there. But the Bengals receivers, other than Chase, didn't really do anything at all in this game.
So, I mean, obviously you go into the game and you game plan. You know, if you're a defense coordinator, you tilt your coverage towards Chase. It's really an impressive piece of defensive play to limit everybody else that much, because Chase draws so much attention that there should be openings in other parts of the field, and I guess there really weren't.
Yeah, they do a lot of their scheme is trying to drag zones open or rub him free, and they use Chase to rub people free too. So it's not just a one way street, but a lot of their offense is built around him. So some basketball player in the NCAA tournament a few years back, it was from a somewhat smaller school who had some huge percentage of his team's total points scored. And there was like at one point in the tournament, there was only three guys who'd scored for that entire team. And he'd scored like 60% of the points. And two of the guys had scored some points and two other guys had zero. And they, but one point was made by a basketball fan to me that there's a lot of teamwork involved in trying to set that guy up with the ball within, 30 seconds. So they had to get it.
Absolutely. And even when you talk about Chase rubbing other guys free, there's a concept in basketball called screen the screener, right? So if you set a screen for somebody, the defense has to run around that screen, and now you potentially become open by making somebody else open. And so you set a screen for the screener, and then you've got, so Chase would be functioning as a screener there. And then a secondary action would spring him.
By the way, if you didn't just pick this up from right now, Jim is an outstanding basketball fan, a big fan of Terps basketball. He's a great person to include in your discussions when you're talking Terps. Just put an at Zip Jim or at Jim Zip on that. I know you're not all the time on Twitter, but whether you're on Blue Sky or wherever you might be.
Yeah, thank you very much for that shout out. I actually these Ravens have drawn a disproportionate amount of my attention this month, but we'll be zooming back into Terps basketball when January comes around.
All right. Sad to see him lose that first game to Michigan. It looked like they had a pretty decent first half in play before things went
down. Michigan is a monster this season, though.
All right. Back to the Ravens here. Let's talk packages a little bit. And we don't need a lot of time on this. Jumbo, they didn't play any at all. Base, they played one snap. When did they play their one snap of base? On the Bengals' final offensive play to stop their 4th-and-1 attempt. That was their Jumbo-esque defense they put in. They put in the base, and they got great penetration from Jenkins on that play, by the way. Just a fantastic play by him. He made it. Drove his guy 3 yards into the backfield. I think that might have been Risner on the play. Risner or Karras, one of the two. And then following right behind him was Roquan Smith, who got into that hole, and he did not give it up. And it took down P. Ryan, right? P. Ryan. Samaje P. Ryan.
Yeah.
For a
ex-Raven.
Gain of nothing. Was P. Ryan an ex-Raven, really?
I think so.
Okay. I didn't know. It's certainly possible he's in camp at some point. I did not know that. Okay. They didn't play any standard nickel, and they've only played a few snaps when Hamilton's been hurt of standard nickel since they committed to this. The commitment to playing Hamilton on the field at slot corner for every 5 DB snap has been remarkable. It's been one of the things that, it's out of the box. It's certainly something that Orr completely committed to. And I think there've been several things like that I've been really happy to see. And I think the next evolution of this might be rushing only 4 on a high number of plays, because that was pretty effective, as we're going to get to in a minute on this.
Well, it's extremely dependent on those 4 being able to win a certain amount of those plays, right? So I think that this is another thing that circles back to the effectiveness of the individual rushers that we saw.
Right. And there will be a lot of people calling for the Ravens to draft a pass rusher at the top. And I think that it's certainly one of the big needs on a team that has a lot of big needs right now coming in next year. But, you know, the nice thing, they probably do not need an offensive tackle. And that's we'll talk about that on the offensive show. But they might have three guys right now who could play tackle right now. And that's it's very exciting.
You want to give us a teaser?
Well, I think Vincent looked really good in his snaps. I'll give you the quick teaser.
Yeah.
His first NFL snap, he got a highlight block as I scored. He blocked Osai three times separately on a pass block. He drove him to the inside. Then Osai tried to come around back on the outside. He hit him again. And then Osai tried to recover again. It's a very extended play. And he hit him a third time. And it was just extremely impressive, that play. And then he had a good block on the 22-yard run, I think, by Mitchell. That was their last pre-kneel play. So it's a nice set of three plays. Didn't do anything
wrong.
That's
awesome. He goes on the George Warhop portfolio, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if you want George Warhop gone, this is one of the things that's going to be plastered in your face is, hey, he banged the table for Carson Vinson, and he looks like a player now. I hope they don't have to go to him anymore this year, but I think it's also remarkable he got on the field before the end of this year on a team that had Joe Noteboom as a backup, who's been, you know, not a good left tackle by any stretch of the imagination, but he's been in the league for 8-9 years now. And he's a guy who's been a serviceable backup.
Knowledgeable, serviceable, reliable, knows the offense, that kind of stuff, veteran.
Yeah. And so, you know, you figure he'd be the first choice, and he was, but then all of a sudden, you know, he's not active and Carson Vinson is for 2 weeks. Then he goes back active for 2 weeks. And then Vinson again is we will not return, I don't believe, to seeing Noteboom on the active unless Vincent does something wrong in these next couple of weeks, or Noteboom is needed to be, say, the backup. Because I think at this point, as I see it right now, I would predict that Carson Vinson would be the starting left tackle if Stanley cannot go this next week.
Yeah. And you're not concerned about that based on just off of what you saw? I mean, obviously, somewhat,
I'm concerned.
Sure.
I'm very concerned, but
you're not alarmed based on what you saw on the field.
I'm concerned and excited about the prospect that he could be ahead of the curve for where he should be at this point. How about that?
That's great. And it leads me to ask, I did not take notice. This is not the offense show. So just real quickly, was Emery active or not?
One play. He came in at the 2-minute warning, blocked on the 22-yard run. And then I believe he's on the field for the remainder of the kneel down snaps, but those don't count. So they're not scored. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Going through the rest of the packages. One snap of base. I got standard nickel, non big nickel, 40 snaps. That is the meat and potatoes of the Ravens defense at this point. That's Hamilton at slot corner, Gilman and Starks, generally speaking, back. And they had 23 plays of that, 5.3 yards per play. Nothing wrong with that. You'll win a lot of football games.
How many defensive linemen are in the field for the big nickel? Two or one?
Two. Okay. Yeah. So it's a standard defense. It's really a very good run defense for the Ravens because they've got Hamilton in the box then as an extra tackler. They have two linebackers, two outside linebackers also. So that it should be, you know, should be a pretty good run defense as well as a versatile and effective pass defense as well.
So it's a 2-4-5.
Yeah, it's the same as regular nickel. All you're doing is exchanging Hamilton for a more normally sized slot corner.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Then they did not play the uncovered nickel in this game. I thought they had it on the field once, and we looked for the play again. So it might have been they had a timeout called before the play or the quarter ended or something, and they exchanged again. They played one snap of rush nickel where they had three outside linebackers. And I thought it was more than that, but they actually played more rush dime is what they really played in that group. The dime they played is all some version of rush where they were playing with one down lineman. I think they also had one snap with two down linemen in this group, but 28 dime snaps. The thing I mentioned earlier is the big thing about this, that they went to dime earlier. And I think it was probably a function of not trusting Simpson in this game.
So getting him off the field in exchange for a safety.
Yeah.
Or a defensive back.
Yeah. Actually, I guess it would be a slot corner for him. So it was Ardarius Washington was replacing him, just not at the same position. So Hamilton moved to weak side linebacker and Washington went to slot at that time. And Washington was pretty effective.
Unheadlined. Yes. I was going to say, Washington, talk about Washington, please.
Well, he only got targeted once, and it was a 7-yard play. So he's like, oh, that's good, but not that good. But the 7-yard play was on 3rd and 9. He's playing soft intentionally. They came up, made the play, and then they, I don't remember if they went for it on fourth and two or punted, but they, but it, it was a drive stalling or ending play. Let me put it that way.
So this is a guy who, you know, he's been out all year and he comes in and plays very effectively, like out of nowhere. Like, what an addition.
Yeah, it's a big addition. It's, you know, it's, he has value playing where he is because it means you could take Simpson off the field a few more snaps and just play him on first and second down. But he also has value because you just never know in terms of depth. And we don't want to be forced into the situation where Hamilton has to move back to the back end, a strong safety.
Yep.
Ain't going to happen now. You got a Darius Washington. He'll play as needed to make Hamilton your, where you want, let him play where you want him, whether that's
also a really smart, a really tenacious, smart player who's seems to always be where he's supposed to be. Maybe he's not, sometimes in, there's situations where he's not physically capable of making the play, I guess, but he's always in the right spot. It just as a fan, it seems to me.
Yeah. I he throws his body around. I mean, he is a beast in there. Yeah. And, you know, Marlon Humphrey is in some ways a similar player. Marlon Humphrey is having a lot of physical issues this year, a lot of physical issues. He's at the very bottom of PFF's coverage ratings for cornerbacks all across the league, the very bottom, last among all guys who play 50% of the snaps, literally.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a tough spot to be. I his physicality has been important, and I'm still optimistic that he can move to safety and be effective. I do think he's just about done at cornerback. And so it's time for him to make that change. But I think he brings a lot of portable skills to the safety position. And that interception we saw in the game yesterday was just such a play. I mean, basically that's a loose bracket tipped ball. He happened to be, you know, at an odd angle to the bracket, but he's, you know, made the play beautifully on it. And that's, you know, what he'll have to do as a safety in part. The other thing is tackle. And, you know,
he's probably a good tackler though, right?
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. I think I don't think he'll be like a glaring weakness. You know, I think he'll be probably better than Gilman as a tackler. I don't think he's up with the top safeties in the league in that category, but he's better than Gilman as a tackler. Yeah.
I remember, so when he was drafted, there was a cry on the RSR boards that we didn't go with the tight end. Was it OJ Howard who went to the Buccaneers? And I think that we can comfortably say that we got the better of that deal. He's been a hell of a player for the Ravens. Yeah. He really has been.
Yeah, he sure has. I think it's the guy that went ahead of him that year was Marcus Peters that they could have had. And I'm not even sure. I think that's correct. I think those are the two guys that they might have had a chance at corner. And Marcus, of course, great interception career, but he's been around the league. He's been passed around. There've been, you know, some issues of value and
I think know, that like if we went fit peak, in if we went peak value versus career value, I think I might comfortably take Peters as peak value.
Yeah.
And maybe take Marlon career value. Not sure.
Yeah, probably. I think I go there too. I think, you know, first of all, Marcus Peters still is in the league somewhere, I think. Okay, I'm not sure. Maybe with the Raiders. I'm not sure where he is now, but it's worth maybe taking a look at.
I'm not going to offer any more opinions like that because I looked up Samaje Perine, and it does not seem that he was ever with the Ravens. So
That's all right. It happens all the time. And there's been a lot of guys who've gone through the Ravens who ended up being successful somewhere else. Let's see. They played one snap a quarter. That's the last thing I have to say about packages here. They played on the second to last play of the first half. They had seven defensive backs on the field. They got TJ Tampa on as a seventh. Not really anything to say about that, but the going to the dime defense early to get Simpson off the field is probably the interesting note. And the other one being that they played just very light the whole game, that they never felt like they had to put three defensive linemen on the field. So it kind of justified their choice of only having four active.
So one of the things that I wanted to say about this game, because so the Ravens went into an opposing stadium against the number 12 ranked offense and deep by DVOA, and they pitched a shutout, and that's very rare. And I felt watching the game that it was never, I would call this a weather-assisted shutout and a game script-assisted shutout, right? Because, you know, certainly there were a couple of plays where receivers maybe with frozen fingertips were unable to haul in passes that they would normally have hauled in, both for the Bengals and the Ravens. And then once the Bengals were down by a certain score, you know, by a certain margin, it became, you know, kicking a field goal became, you know, less viable. And so there were some fourth and situations where they went for it, where otherwise they would have kicked a field goal and broken up the shutout. So You know, I'm not saying put an asterisk on this, but I wouldn't call it the same. This wasn't a Ray Lewis, Ed Reed dominant era Ravens style shutout to me.
Well, the dirty little secret is that the 2000 Ravens had shutouts that were assisted by missed field goals and by some of the same, you got to go for it because of game script situation. Not even you got to go for it because of game script, because it was the game's out of hand and you don't want to be the guy who kicks a field goal in a 27-0 game, because that's happened.
Yeah.
But they didn't, in the first game, they beat the Steelers 16-0, and the Steelers were inside the 5-yard line and had to go for it on fourth down and got stopped because down 16-0, they needed two scores and they had to do it. The Browns, same deal. They were down 12-0 and had to do it. So, you know, they certainly had situations where they were assisted. I think the Cowboys missed a field goal and the Bengals might have also missed a field goal in their shutout too. So I'm not 100% how they all played out, but I know they were assisted in ways.
That's true of every shutout, you know, like, cause it's so easy to score a field goal in the NFL. I remember you said King a field goal in the 27-0 game. Was that Wink Martindale who was bitching up a storm when a team did that, broke up a shutout with a field goal at the end of the game, a meaningless.
Against the Ravens?
Against the Ravens, absolutely, yeah. He was steamed.
I don't remember it. I mean, their last shutout was in 2018 against Tennessee in that 11-sack game. So that was a Martindale-era shutout. And then after that, it would have to have been after that, like 1920 or 21, that it would have occurred. And then 22, they got McDonald. McDonald never had a shutout, by the way. And it shows you how hard shutouts to go is. The Ravens haven't had one in 7 years. They had 15. They get one about every other year, but not McDonald. He never had one. And then they had a triple ground defense, and they didn't get one with McDonald. And then they have Zach Orr, and it's taken them 2 years to get their first. So,
yeah, true. Yeah, in the modern NFL, it's hard to shut teams out.
Yeah, yeah. The kicking game, particularly in a first half kind of more neutral game scripts, you end up with a lot more cheap field goals these days than you used to. But I agree with your points on that. Particularly the game script played a big role because they waved the white flag. I mean, they just ran the clock out on themselves from 7.5 to go. They couldn't have got out that if it had been possible for Zach Taylor to say, "Hey, look, I want to call Harbaugh right now. We'll agree to cancel the last 7:30 of this game." He would have done it in a second. He would have done it in a second with down 24-0 with the team playing the way it was, with all the injuries piling up. I mean, he'd have.
I don't fault him for that either. I mean, that game was over, clearly.
Oh, sure. No, I think it's very, very mature. And I last year they beat the Bills 35-10, and both clubs couldn't get out of the stadium quickly enough. And they ran the last, I think it was 6:47 in like 11 plays. Yeah. So, but that's between the two teams each, having some of that. So, okay. Exciting stuff. Let's move on to the pass rush. Talk about that a little bit. Now, we talked about the opportunity set that Burrow had, or I didn't talk about it directly, but I talked about it tangentially here. He had ample time and space 15 times in this game. That's 36% of the time.
That's normal, right? That's about...
It's about 30% more than normal.
Okay.
25-30% more than normal in that range. Because I'd say about 28-29% is what I would normally expect. So 36% in this game. Those 15 plays, though, only went for 93 yards, 6.2 yards per play. Now, 8.5 is normal. They had a sack among those plays. So with sack with ATS is somewhat unusual. Chris Lamar gave up 2 sacks with ATS in this game.
We call that a coverage sack.
Yeah, that would be a coverage sack. And they just did a great job of making it difficult for him to find easy targets down the field. And one of the dirty secrets about Joe Burrow is he just does not have great arm strength.
Yep.
I had a guest on from Cincinnati this week on the Know Your Foe episode. He's a longtime Bengals guard who played in the Freezer Bowl in 81.
Oh, my gosh. I remember that game.
Dave Lapham, the guard, is if you want to look him up. But he played a lot of years for the Bengals, a lot of games, and he's now a big-time radio guy in Cincinnati and a podcaster. He works with Dan Hoard, who is a classmate of mine at Syracuse. So anyway, the Lapham talked about Burrow, and he started talking about he can make any throw he needs. He puts exactly what velocity is needed on. He has an absolute cannon for an arm, blah, 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 blah. It's hard for me to keep a straight face. Really hard for me to keep a straight face. Now, he does. He's more like, I mean, he's already kind of like Aaron Rodgers at 28 or whatever the hell he is right now.
Yeah. He's a year older than Lamar, right? Year and a half?
Is he?
Or maybe just a couple months. I think just a couple months older than Lamar.
Okay. I'd like to know that if you want to look it up while we're talking here. But in any case, he's much more of a guy who throws the ball to a spot and lets his receiver run under it than a guy who is, you know, throws a bunch of lasers where he's trying to fit it through windows. And that's to his own benefit. I mean, and the Ravens, you know, they gave him a lot of tight windows to throw into, and he was clearly not comfortable doing so, including some misses. And they had a few drops. You know, they didn't help him out. Chase had a couple bad drops in this game that looked like they could have been, you know, decent gains. But
4 weeks. He's 4 weeks older than Lamar. December 10th, 1996.
Okay, so he's going to be 30 next year.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Okay. You also found.
Well, no, I'm sorry. He's 29 and 5 days old.
Now. So he'll be 30 next year.
He'll be 30. Yeah, but very late in the season. Like,
that's right. And Lamar will be 30 in early 2027.
Right.
So
gotta, like week 18 or the first week of the playoffs, sometime somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I found the Wink Martindale had a shutout broken up by a late field goal, and it was the Bengals, and it's 2020, and it was either their first game, which ended 27-3, or it was their last game, the last game of the season, which ended 38-3.
Wow.
So he had a shutout taken away, and he was very steamed about it. He was stomping off the field. He said stuff about it post game too.
You could probably look at those two games and see where the field goal was kicked in the fourth quarter and be able to figure it out. But I'll take a look at that. You don't need to. So with the ample time and space on those 15 opportunities, Burrow missed his expectation by 35 yards. That's a not insignificant 2.3 yards per throw. He came up short on those ample time and space opportunities. Now, what Burrow's really known for is getting the ball out quickly. So he did that 16 times in this game, 38%. Rodgers' percentage was even higher last week, I believe. 100 yards on those plays, 6.3 yards per play, 4 yards above expectation. The expectation for a ball out quick throw, if you've been listening to the show for a long time, I'm sure you know it's 6.0 yards per throw, but he had 6.3, so he's 4 yards better than expectation.
And what's the expectation for ample ATS?
8.5, and for pressure is 3.5.
All right.
Okay. And people have asked me, where did I get that from? I arrived at those numbers after years of watching Joe Flacco and the Ravens defense and what they've been able to accomplish on both sides of the ball, and Lamar for that matter. Lamar, it'd be a number that I would want to pick that would be lower than that, because I think Lamar's been above average quarterback. But there is a sort of finger to the wind component of that modeling that I agree. So I'm trying to get this right on a qualitative basis and put some quantitative analysis into it, that he should do better on certain opportunities than on others. Anybody should. Okay. But there's also a component that if you get ample time and space against a pack secondary, like let's say you rushed none and had 11 in coverage every play, you might expect you'd do better or worse than 8.5 yards. I'm not sure. It could really go either way.
There's got to be the graph probably has there's an optimal rate of how,
yes,
you know, how many people in coverage, you know, is effective. And then you add more, take more away from the pass rush and it becomes less effective.
By the way, that would be a really interesting problem to try and work on, would be like, what's the optimal number of pass rushers for a type of quarterback? That'd be a really interesting problem to work on.
It would be too complex for me.
See, that's too many people say that. And it's actually, you and I sat down and we just had a reasonable conversation about it, I bet we'd get somewhere started in terms of model. And then some other people who are really into it can come up with the next step in that model. That's the way I look at it. Okay. All right. So pressure, 11 plays he was under pressure. The Ravens didn't get a lot of pressure in this game. 26% is low, and you don't want to have 15 ATS and 11 pressures. You want to get more pressures than you give up ATSs. But those 11 plays, the Bengals gained 5 net yards. Not 5 per play, 5 total for half a yard per play, 33 yards below expectation. So he was 64 yards. He underperformed his opportunity set for the game. And that is a massive number. Even with a opportunity set that is slightly tilted towards a good end, so he has more expected yards, getting him that far under expectation, and it was by 1.5 yards per throw overall, is a really nice result.
So you're telling us that the coverage unit played fantastic, and Zach Gore's defense maybe made Burrow hesitate a couple of times, and maybe there are some weather problems with catching.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put zero value on the weather thing for sure. I would say that the pass rush was good enough to get some pressure and also to pursue Burrow, so he didn't have all day to walk around and get a sandwich by the line of scrimmage. So they did good pursuing the sideline, forcing him out of bounds, forcing him to throw away three balls, doing what he did on some of those plays, forcing him to cry after getting pushed to the ground, all that stuff. All right, now let me talk about deception quickly, because that didn't go that well. The pass rush by numbers, I guess I got to say this first. They only used 2 5-man rushes. They used 1 2-man rush. That was the next to last play of that first half. They used 1 3-man rush. I think that might have been the first play of the game overall, but it was early on, if I recall correctly. So 1-2, 1-3, and 2 5s. They averaged 3.98 pass rushers per play. Everything else was a 4-man rush, which I have never seen an aggregate number under 4 for a single game. And I can never remember seeing it anyway. I'd have to go back and check years and years and years of what I've got to see if there are any instances of it. But I can't recall a situation where any team rushed less than 4 per play.
If you wanted to check a Ravens year, I would ask about the year that Greg Madison was the defense coordinator. Pops Madison.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. I will do that between shows, and we'll have that information for you on the second part of the show. All right. That's a fairly quick to check 1 year like that. So it'd be like checking 2010 or 2009 or 10, I guess, because Pagano came in 11, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
Rexy only stayed 1 year, right, with Harbaugh.
Right, 2008. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If we go to the rest of the pass rush, the only thing I have to talk about is deception. None of that was as effective as the Ravens just sitting back and rushing 4. They were just much more effective at doing the things they could to layer and disguise and pack their coverages, play downhill football and make tackles quickly than they were getting after the quarterback. The off-ball blitzes, they had only 4 of them the whole game, but the Bengals averaged 9.3 yards per play on those. It was only 3 plays, actually, as it worked out for 28, because it was 1 double. They had 13 stunts during the game, which is a lot. They hadn't been stunning very much. Those allowed 5.2 yards per play, which is a little bit worse than this overall passing for the game.
That looks random.
It looks nothing you could draw a conclusion from. And simulated pressures, they had 4 for 4.8 yards per play. Again, I don't think there's anything you'd point to there. There was a turnover in there on a simulated pressure. And then there are 2+ elements. They had 5 plays for 41 yards, 8.2 yards per play. Again, not enough on any of those, but you throw them all together, and there just wasn't any big advantage that Orr had in terms of sending deception at the Bengals. It was more about, how do I optimize my coverages to try and make them fit a quarterback who's going to get the ball out on time if I show him something deceptive.
So that seems like a strategy for Burrow, right? That seems like a custom Burrow game plan.
Yep. Now, look ahead at who they're going to still play.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, is he anything like Joe Burrow at this point in his career?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
We kind of already talked about that, didn't we? Drake May, is he a guy that you want to try and play disguise coverage with? I don't actually know.
I don't know either, but a second-year player, I would think that that would certainly be an avenue that they would try. Now, I don't know anything. Like, I haven't looked at, Patriots game film and what defenses have succeeded with or not versus him. But a young quarterback, I would think that they would try to throw their exotic stuff at him.
Right. He's not a rookie. And he's, stepped forward with a really good year this year. So maybe not, is what I would say in the case of Drake May. In the case of Jordan Love, I think he might be another guy that you might be happy just backing off against. For one thing, you cut down on a lot of the mobility of quarterbacks when you just back off into you have the potential of having a spy, you have underneath coverage, you have somebody to trigger downhill if the quarterback breaks the pocket. You just have a lot of choices you can make, a lot of chess pieces to move after initial options don't work out for a quarterback if you want to try that.
Jordan Love is a bigger arm than some of the other guys too that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe not bigger than May. I'm not sure about May.
anyway, I it wouldn't surprise me if I, you know, Mahomes would be another guy that I think that this might be a workable strategy with. I think that you could, he's obviously, you know, done for the year, and the, and so are the Chiefs, more importantly. But it could be that, that, Josh Allen is a guy. I think Josh Allen has been a guy who's, who's been able to beat some, deceptive looks with some, quick out passes. I also don't think he has a particularly exceptional group of receivers who, given extra time, are going to beat you a high percentage of the time.
Yeah. The thing is though, you can't go light against the Bills because they'll run James Cook down your throat.
Right. You wouldn't be going light. I don't think. I don't think this means you go light. It means just you rush your four. You rush four.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you're not talking about package. You're talking about what they're doing.
I'm talking about, yeah, how many they rush, whether they rush four, or they rush five or six and are trying to get big pressure in there early. So the Ravens had the biggest pressure, and this has been a kind of a cool thing. Draymond Jones, two pressures, four quarterback hits that were on time, and one that was late. I think, by the way, I think that's only one pressure, it should be, but one pressure, four quarterback hits, and then one late pressure. He led the team by a mile in terms of pressure events. And the five quarterback hits that he had in total is the third highest total in the league this year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I think you got a league where you got Myles Garrett running wild over a multi-game period. Wouldn't you figure him for like six, seven, a couple of times? You
know, 1,000%. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quarterback hits does not include sacks, or sacks are a subset of hits?
They are a overlapping Venn diagram circle with quarterback hits. You can get a quarterback hit without, sorry, you can get a sack without getting a quarterback hit under two conditions. One is you run the quarterback out of bounds, and number two, or the quarterback goes down on his own. That's another possibility. And possibility number three is you knock the ball out of the quarterback's hand without sending him to the ground.
Okay.
Which, by the way, the first thing you should be doing, well, somebody should be doing in the immediate vicinity, is knocking the quarterback on his ass as hard as possible after that ball is loose, because he's loses all protections. So you want to make sure you hammer him.
So there are sacks without quarterback hits, and obviously there are quarterback hits without sacks. Okay.
Yes. So Venn diagram, that's perfect situation. But the bulk of that is the intersection of the two, which they're both. It's very, very unusual that you have one that is not both. All right. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a lot of things in the second half of the show. But first, Jim, I just always love talking football with you. Tell folks where they can contact you online. I know it's not always easy.
Well, so I am on Twitter. I'm one of the people who likes every one of your posts for putting up your podcast. I'm also on Substack at Zip Drive and Dish, which was my attempt at a sports themed name that included Zip in it. So I have a column every week about the performance of the Ravens passing game, or receivers. I call it Receivers Report, and that comes out every, I shoot for Tuesday. It's always up by Thursday.
Okay. All right. And that's, I have the yards per target and the new stat that you have, that's yards per target times
success rate.
Success rate. There you go. Success rate, by the way, very important stat. Another one that's really undervalued by people is, you know, what percentage of the time do you keep your team up with the sticks? Beautiful. Yeah. All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag if you will. I'll try and decide whether questions are better used on an offense show, a defense show. We have a number coming up in the second half of this show. On Friday Morning GM, or in some cases, I'll do a 1 to 3 minute video short to try and answer a question. So those are probably the way I can most quickly answer a question. And I'm trying to do more of those as questions come in. So I really appreciate it when you contribute. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.